97.5, The Fanatic.
What is going on, everyone? 97.5, The Fanatic. I'm Hunter Brody. I have you until 4 p.m. this afternoon, and there's so much to dive into. Tom Alford is producing today's show. We got the Sixers gearing up for the playoffs. We got some Philly spring training storylines. The Eagles made a move yesterday. It's a crazy NFL offseason. And, of course, Villanova makes the Final Four. March Madness has been a wild ride. And today's show is going to be a little bit different from 1 to 4 p.m. So the first hour, I will be solo. Then from there, Anita Marks, who does some daily wager stuff over at ESPN and does some stuff up in New York as well, will join us in studio for 3 hours total. So it's going to be just so much. There's so many angles to dive into in this sports world. And I think where I want to begin is with our 76ers. And right now, they seem to be a little bit out of our minds, just a little, because of the West Coast swing. So Friday night, 10:30 p.m., you kind of casually have it on late night, but maybe you're not on the edge of your seat the same way you would be for a 7 p.m. East Coast start. And by the way, it helps when your squad annihilates the opponent, and James Harden was sensational, and he was scoring at will, and he was doing everything he needed to, and it was just a fun watch. You get your good old-fashioned rest time for Joel Embiid to sit on the bench, not log too many minutes. So they handled business, and they did the same against the Lakers prior to that as well. And with where they are, we woke up and they're in first place in the Eastern Conference, the Miami Heat. They're struggling big time. Eric Spoelstra is telling, or I guess the way I should phrase it is, he's asking Jimmy Butler, like, you want me to fight you? You want me to fight you? That's the type of back and forth they're having on the bench, so they seem to be slipping a little bit. The 76ers are first in the Eastern Conference with a massive game today against the Phoenix Suns, who, when you look at what they've done this season, they're 30-8 at home and 30-6 on the road. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They're on a 7-game win streak. They're electric. That's what they are. Super fun squad, just from a basketball fan perspective, obviously, but I want to see the Sixers do some damage to them today. There's not that much time left in this regular season, though, as they are gearing up towards the postseason. And I just don't know what is going to change my opinion at this point. I feel I have a grasp on where I see them. And it hasn't changed since they made the move for James Harden. I always assumed that once that happened, before we saw him play, he had the hamstring injury, there was the All-Star break, I put myself in the mindset of, wow, you have superstar talent that can compete at the top of the NBA. That's what I knew. Are there flaws in their team? Yeah, you got thinner on the bench, which the bench was already kind of problematic, and you lose a Drummond, you lose Seth Curry, you lose bodies in general. So, of course, that's going to play a role in what you have available for you coming off of Doc Rivers' bench. Transition defense seems to be getting shelled. And defensive rebounds. Teams are getting second-chance opportunities where they miss their initial shot, they grab a board, they kick it out for three, and then majority of the times in this league, when it's someone who has the ability to cash in, he'll make you pay, no doubt. I bring that up to you because I get it. That's the flaws of the Sixers, and that might be their kryptonite. When it's all said and done, and we dissect how far they go, and maybe they come up a little bit shy, those might be the same points that we are going to discuss on how Daryl Morey can improve that with major offseason acquisitions, and maybe Tobias Harris is out of here, and the list goes on and on, and that really is for another discussion for another day. Other teams have their versions of what the 76ers go through. The Miami Heat right now just don't seem to be on a collective same page. The Boston Celtics, you have Tatum and you have Brown, but we've seen at times, well, they've turned it around, don't get me wrong. They're not a perfect basketball team that you can't ever beat. They are a beatable team. The Bucks are not the same level, I'd say, of what we've seen in previous years. There is a hole in their game as well. You can beat, they have their versions of a thin bench, of a defensive rebounding problem. Nothing in the regular season is going to change my feeling on their ceiling. I'm not saying they are going to win a championship, but I'm saying that if their superstars play to the level that we feel they can, which is what James Harden did against the Clippers, And it's Joel Embiid consistently dropping 30, 35, 36, 37, dominating. Tyrese Maxey, what more can I say about the kid that we all haven't said for the last however many months on these airwaves, which he's incredible. And his drive and his determination to get better each week is mind-blowing, and he's so dedicated. It was sort of cliche what he gave us the other day afterwards. He spoke about his, this was to the media, he spoke about his dad when he was younger and how it's all about working hard with the lights off, and then that will shine when the lights are on, so people will see what you've been doing off to the side and how much work you put in, because naturally and organically you'll see it when games are actually occurring. Sort of cliche, but seeing his growth and how much he has put into his craft, it felt raw. Listening to him say it, listening to the tone, seeing his body language, his demeanor, the smile on his face, it didn't just sound similar to, for example, if a Kyle Schwarber comes to town and goes, I want to win baseball games. I chose the Phillies because I want to win. Plus, I love cheesesteaks. There's a way to angle your message because you know you're living up to the Philly fandom and you were told what to do by PR. Nick Sirianni walking out in a Phillies hat and a 76ers varsity jacket a few days into his tenure. I think there was an established game plan prior to that occurring. This wasn't that. This was Maxey just honestly telling his story, and it adds up to why he has been so special. Getting back to sort of the moral of the story here is, so they play the Suns today at 6. They have Milwaukee on Tuesday night in Philadelphia. They're going to be super fun to dive into and super fun to analyze, especially because the last time we saw them play a real team, well, they played the Heat, but that was the shorthanded Heat at that point. Or no, the Sixers were shorthanded, excuse me. It was the game before where they lost to the Raptors that the Sixers didn't have their bodies. But the Brooklyn Nets game stands out to everyone. The beatdown that happened, there was so many emotions tied towards it, and they came out flat and they were embarrassed. You got the Suns, you got the Bucks, Pistons, Hornets, Cavs, Pacers. That's the rest of the way. Nothing's going to change where I'm at now. Even if something bad was to happen against Milwaukee or whatever, nothing's going to change. Because I know when the players play to their max capability, they're at the top of the league just like everyone else is in this Eastern Conference. Just like the Celtics are. Just like you see with Milwaukee. All these things. If Giannis and Middleton play to their capabilities, they're going to be dogs. If Harden and Joel Embiid play to the top of their capabilities, they're going to be dogs. If Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum play to their max capability, they're going to be dogs. Even if the Celtics have their issues and the Milwaukee Bucks have their issues surrounding their roster construction, just like the Sixers do with the super thin bench. And that's why I can't wait to see how this whole thing plays out, because they have a legitimate chance. And I'm curious what it's going to look like. James Harden seemed to be playing passive, but when he goes downhill and when he attacks and has the scorer's mentality, you can see how much that improves what this team is capable of doing. And I'm sort of in that mode now of get me there. Get me there. I have my opinion. I have my thoughts. Get me there. Because there's really no seesaw that I'm on anymore. To go through the whole Mark Zumoff race, you know, we're on a seesaw coming down to the end of the game. I don't really have that right now coming down to the stretch. I'm not on the seesaw. I'm right where I need to be. Let's get some playoff hoops going. And that's where we begin today's show. Tom, good afternoon. Good afternoon, early afternoon. How are you? And what are your thoughts on this Sixer squad as they approach the back stretch?
Well, good afternoon to you as well, Birds. I'm not quite where you're at yet. I want to see how the Sixers with James Harden and Joel Embiid match up and play against, in my opinion, the two best teams in the NBA. I think the Phoenix Suns are the best team in the NBA, obviously making them the best team in the Western Conference. I still believe, record aside, I think Milwaukee Bucks are the best team in the Eastern Conference as well. These are the two best teams in the NBA that the Sixers are facing. With Joel Embiid and James Harden, the only real true test top-tier team, like we've played some Bulls, and we beat the Bulls pretty good. We played the Dallas Mavericks. That was a really nice win when they were at full strength. Other than that, the one game that is going to stick in my mind, and in Philadelphia fans all around the city's mind, is that game against the Brooklyn Nets. You know how the Sixers can go out and make us forget about that game and really push us over the top? is going out and putting up two good fights against these teams, hopefully winning both, but getting at least going at least 500 in these next two games. I want to see what Joel Embiid and James Harden can do against the top tier opponents, because I haven't seen them yet. We've seen, it's been what, about 15 games of those two together, and I believe they only have three losses in that span, I believe four maybe. So I want to see how these guys match up against the top tier teams before I make that decision where, all right, it is what it is. This team is who they are. I know what I'm getting from them. I'm almost there, but I'm not quite there, because these two games are really important to me going forward.
That's interesting, because if I asked you right now, are the Phoenix Suns a better squad than the Sixers? I feel your answer is yes, right?
It is, correct.
Okay, so if they lose tonight against the Phoenix Suns, you're changing how you feel about Embiid and Harden, or no?
Not necessarily. If they go out and lose by 25 and it's not close, then my opinion might change a little bit, because that's two blowouts against two really good teams, the Brooklyn Nets and the Phoenix Suns, in the last 2 weeks. It's more just don't get blown out. Don't be embarrassed like we saw in Brooklyn.
Compete.
Compete. Be competitive. Be competent. And I think they can. But that's always going to be in the back of my mind, the Brooklyn Nets game. And until I see it against a top-tier opponent like the Suns and like the Milwaukee Bucks, then my mindset's always going to be there.
And I get going back to that, reflecting back to the Brooklyn Nets game and wondering, what was that all about? Was that just a hiccup? Is there something to it? I don't put too many emotional ties through regular season games, and I've kind of mentioned this thought process before. It's like baseball, 162. You have 60 wins, you have 60 losses. No matter if you're the best team or the worst team, what do you do with those other games will tell you about who the Phillies are or who that said baseball team is for that season. Out of 82 regular season games, you're going to have an electric win on the road against the Boston Celtics in TD Garden. And while you have one of those, it's inevitable, before the season even begins, you're going to have a dud where you're going to have a painful loss at home to a team that you should beat, but you can't score. You look miserable. You look awful. That's already written in the schedule. What do you do with those other games that tell me about the team? But it's so hard, because regular season basketball and postseason basketball are like two different sports. So it's like, yes, you could take a percentage out of some of these games, but you can't take everything. And you'll never see a back-to-back while flying to different cities in a postseason seven-game series. But you'll see that against the Miami Heat this year, which you'll never see that circumstance ever when it matters. So how do I apply that to my feelings on this team? So there's so many different angles to that, for sure. And another thing that I always go to is, so let's say they lose ugly to Brooklyn, which they did. They lost ugly to Brooklyn. It was terrible. Well, the Toronto Raptors series in 2019, the Sixers won game three by 21 points at home to go up 2-1. 21 points at home to go up 2-1. Joel Embiid was doing airplanes, and the whole city was going electric. And you thought, with game four at home, you could go up 3-1 heading back to Toronto. And with the blink of an eye, it was like, whoa, hold on a second. The Sixers lost game four by five? So if you're in the Raptors' shoes, we just lost by 21. The next night, you just won by five. If you lose a game by 21, you win the game the next game by 5, and then you might lose by 14, and then you win by 7, and then you lose by 8, and then you win by 2. There's no real actual, well, because this happened last time, that means the next game is going to play out the same way. Each game has its own identity. It has its own brand. If James Harden can't make a damn shot, I think last night, let's kind of tie this into Villanova, because if Houston, on any other night, gets those same exact looks from three and they make it, but the same exact game plays out for the same exact looks, it could be a completely different outcome. So that's why I have trouble with that one game against the Nets and say, well, because that happened, I now have to change all of my opinions on the Sixers. They could play again and the Sixers could win by six because their shots fall differently that night.
Yeah, also, I know we're going to get into Final Four later. They went 1-for-18, Houston, last night from three. No one ever is winning a game, or 99% of the time, you are not winning a game when you go 1-for-18 from three. That was unbelievable watching that game last night. I couldn't believe how bad they shot and how inconsistent they were behind the 3-point line. I understand what you're saying. It is regular season. Every game has a different story. A 7-game series, you're not going to lose 4 straight games of the Brooklyn Nets by 30 points. It's not going to happen. I understand the NBA is weird. The regular season, there's, you know, ebbs and flows. It's a roller coaster to an extent. I just believe I'm not quite sure how good this team is yet. I think they're a very, very good team. I think they can compete for an Eastern Conference final, maybe a championship. I really do, especially if Harden gets back to himself or he looks like himself against how he did against the Clippers and earlier when he first came here, those first five games against the Knicks and the Timberwolves. However, this could push me over the top of, hey, no, they can actually go out and they can win a championship. I know for a fact. And these two games upcoming can have that effect on me and you know, affect my thinking going forward.
In my heart of hearts, if they maximize everything they have, because they have Embiid and Harden, I truly do think it's possible. But I see them just missing a little bit. They're missing just a little bit. With that said, making the trade puts you in a way better position because you were missing a lot prior to the trade. Now I think you're missing just a little bit. And unfortunately, you can't add that on and tack that onto the roster right now. This is more of an off-season discussion. A Daryl Morey can improve this team a little bit down the road in the off-season and start doing things with whether it's Tobias and adding to this thin bench that we're not satisfied with and all. And maybe that is the downfall. Maybe the DeAndre Jordan minutes that Doc Rivers is inevitably going to use over anybody else will be the difference in a 5-6 minute span of him not being able to defend the pick and roll. I don't know if Charles Bassey, though, for 5 or 6 minutes is the difference in you winning a championship. Maybe it is. Maybe that is. That 5-6 minute run, 7-8 minute run without Joel Embiid on the floor, maybe that is going to be what we have our outrage about. I don't think the answer is on the bench regardless, but I know if I'm Doc Rivers, I'm not dying on the DeAndre Jordan hill. It seems that's going to be the case, though, based off of his rotations right now. When Embiid didn't play and Harden didn't play, the one game they actually won, which was hilarious, it ended up kind of having that result. When you see Paul Millsap and DeAndre Jordan as the two he ends up giving the nod to, it basically writes it in stone right there.
Yeah, it was. That game was huge and very telling of what their plan is going forward. And that's Doc Rivers for you. You know, we can all be frustrated by it. I wanted to see Isaiah Joe get a little bit more run. I know people obviously want Bassey and Reed too, but Doc Rivers trusts his veterans. And if those guys weren't getting time in that game, that they're not getting any time in the playoffs or very minimal times in the playoffs. I believe that his rotation is set and his guys are set pretty much in stone, like you said, at this point when it comes to the bench.
All right, I know we're both big baseball guys. There's a lot of spring training.
So I've heard.
Yeah. I don't think I've missed a pitch. Today might be the first time I miss spring training pitches. So that's a little devastating for me. Maybe I'll throw it up on my phone or something. I won't do that. I'm prepared for the show, of course. But
if you say so.
Yeah. Nick Castellanos making his debut. There's a lot of good storylines. Bryson Stott has looked really good. Mickey Moniak has been tearing the cover off the baseball. So is Matt Vierling, though, speaking of what's going to happen out in center field. And Kyle Schwarber's had some at-bats. There's one guy, though, that I'm actually scared about. And before I get Broads, it's just spring training. Don't you dare. Don't you dare dive too deep into some spring training situations to make you get nervous for the regular season. But I cannot lie. There's something that is happening that happened last year, and I don't know if it's going to change, and I will share it with you on the other side. But I also want to hear from you out there with the 76ers. These last couple of games that we have, is anything going to change your mind at this point, or are you pretty set on what you think this team can be and what they are? I don't see much changing. There's some fun games left. Don't get me wrong. There's some emotional games left that have you rising a bit more off the edge of your seat and on your couch. But I don't think it should overall move the needle to this wild level. I think I got a good grasp on it. What say you? 610-632-0975. That's where we begin today's show. And we'll be back after this.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. I'm Hunter Brody. Good afternoon, everyone out there. See, 12:30 is a weird spot, because for me, it's definitely early afternoon. I wake up around 9-ish. That's like my bread and butter of waking up. But there's a lot of people out there. I get it, Sunday, but just the natural flow of a work week. You're up at 5, you're up at 5:30, you're up at 6. To some, 12:30 to those people who are constantly up at 5, it feels like a totally different atmosphere than, let's say, me and you who might be up at 9 a.m.
And to some people, especially on a Sunday, if they had a long night last night, this is morning to them, you know what I mean? So it is a weird time. I think afternoon's good. You don't have to give me early. I just say, hey, good afternoon, bros. How's it going?
Well, it's funny you say that. So I was talking to my fiance yesterday, and I had to do something around 5, right? And I used the word evening. And she went, whoa, 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 what? And I said, well, what did you want me to say? Tonight? Because it's 5 tonight. But it threw her off because now I feel, and this is just me kind of understanding this now as we talk through this, am I now starting to get weird with my timing? And I'm getting way too specific here? Like, hey, I have something to do this evening. Well, this evening, what the hell does that mean? And now here I am saying happy early afternoon or good early afternoon. Why is this happening to me out of nowhere? There's no reason why I feel I'm now just randomly throwing out specific times like this.
There is a reason.
Why?
Because you're getting old, man.
Really?
That's what it is. Yeah,
really?
I hate to break it to you.
Evening is an old thing to say?
I see a little strand of gray hair in your hair, man.
Shut your mouth.
That's what I see. Is that a wrinkle under your eyes?
Well, I got a lot of bags under my eyes, to be honest with you. That's always been part of the Broads experience. But now, that makes sense, though, because I went for a walk the other day. I put in my AirPods.
Did you bring your walker with you or no?
I did not bring my walker. I should have, and that's where this story's going. I actually put on the station through the app, 97.5, the mobile app, fantastic. Put on my AirPods, and I just went for a nice walk. Nothing crazy, good pace, nice solid pace. I can't even explain to you the level of soreness that I had throughout. I was down for 3 days. I needed a foam roller.
How long did you walk? Was it a couple miles?
I would say about 3 miles.
Okay, so good.
But a good walk, like a solid, slow pace. There wasn't sweat.
No running or anything
like
that?
No, no, no.
And you're a pretty active dude. You play basketball, right? You try and, with your shooting sleeve, get out there a couple times a week. And,
active guy.
And, yeah, so, but now I think that's what it is, man. There's days where, you know, you ever walk, go on a hike or something with your girl or with your partner, whatever it may be, and the next day you're like, man, I'm tired. There's a bunch of steps or something. You're walking or you're walking around the city. Yeah, I just think it's a sign that, like you, we are getting old.
Yeah, you know, for her too, she was doing something the other day, and she's like, oh man, my forearm. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, I think when I lifted that box, and I'm like, that's where we're at now in our lives. You lift a box, you're out for 5 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks upper body injury. I go for a walk, I'm out 3 to 4, and we got to get some imaging done.
Awesome. It's all going downhill from here. That's great to hear.
It's crazy. I might have to switch to the Mikey Mist chair for the back support
back
soon.
Back support, yeah. Yeah. Man. I don't want you, you know, falling down or folding up on me here.
That wouldn't be good. Someone who's folding up and not being able to get the job accomplished, getting back on track a little bit here, Aaron Nola.
That's a professional segue if I've ever heard one.
Well, thank you. I've been doing this for a while. With Aaron Nola, though, it's actually ridiculous how brutal he's been when it comes to, you know, allowing these homers. So he's pitched 5 innings so far in spring training. He's got a 7.20 ERA, 5 innings pitched, 5 hits allowed, 4 home runs. 0-2 count, 0-1 count. I mean, this stuff can happen. It's bad the way that he's getting shown. Actually, the one to Vlad was a 2-strike count. There was, I know the 2-strike counts keep
both
piling up on
the Toronto game were 2-strike counts.
Yes.
You know that.
Both of them against Toronto was 2 counts. Against Pittsburgh, it was 2-2 and 0-1. So these were the counts. So he's up and ahead, and the ball's just flat, and it sits in the middle of the zone right there, 90 miles per hour. Of course it's going to get annihilated. Now, there's a couple ways to look at this. By the time the season begins, maybe he can get himself out of this. His stuff's not going to be there this early in spring training when there was an obvious lockout where players didn't really know and they couldn't anticipate when, I guess, the proper time to get their bodies going would be because you didn't know when the strike would end or the lockout would end, I should say, which put them in an uncomfortable position. But we are witnessing the same issue with this fastball command. It just leaks over the middle of the plate. And I guess this is where it's troubling for the Aaron Nola supporters. And I want to be honest. I was a massive Aaron Nola fan, a huge supporter, until I recognized the glaring hole. He'll still show you 2 innings, 3 innings of Aaron Nola that has some bite to some off-speed pitches, where he is locating the fastball where he needs to be, up and inside, or outside and low, perfectly dotted on the outside part of the dish where, you know, someone who's up the bat gets rung up, umpire gives you a good exciting pump out, you know, big pump for strike three and all that. But it ends up being that one mistake pitch, and that one mistake pitch makes it go from a 2-0 Phillies lead to a 3-2 Phillies are now down because maybe there's a couple guys on base after a dinky single and an error made in the field by Alec Boehm, and now there's a big mistake that's left over the heart of the plate on an 0-2 count or something, and it just shouldn't happen. And, you know, I guess the counter argument to this season is if he does make that mistake pitch and there is now maybe 2 runs scored in that inning, do you have the firepower offensively to make up for those Aaron Nola mistakes where, okay, he gives you a 3.8 ERA, if that's maybe the ballpark that he gives you, which is nothing stellar, but you can maybe keep your head above water and keep you involved in games if that's what Aaron Nola is going to be. To put it in perspective, he was a 4.63 ERA guy last year, and he's a career 3.7 guy-ish, 3.68 ERA is his career. If he gives you around his career average, do you have enough offense to be able to explode? And I do think the answer is yes, but your number two guy being Aaron Nola after Zach Wheeler, he's starting off this season with the same exact flaws that he had last year, and I don't think his confidence is any better. And without him having confidence, I don't know if you ever get over the hump.
I think that's the biggest thing, is the confidence has taken such a hit. Now, it is early. We did have a lockout, obviously, for almost 100 days, which kind of screwed everything up. Obviously, there was Ranger Suarez didn't even know if he was going to get to camp in time because he had a visa issue. So I think it messed everybody up, most players up all around the MLB, pitchers, batters, whatever it may be. It's early, and he's coming off a really bad season, but it's the same problems we've been seeing. Is the two-strike, he can't get that put-away pitch going. He can't command that fastball where he wants it to go. And it's letting up these big home runs in inopportune times. Or maybe it's a 2-0, you're down 2-0, he gives up a home, you're down 5-0 now. Or you blow a lead, like you just said, it's 2-0 Phillies, and then he gives up 3-run homer, and it's 3-2 Phillies. I think we all are in agreement that the offense is going to be really good this season. Bearing an injury, bearing, you know, just absolute cold streaks or really down seasons from all of these guys, from multiple guys, this offense is going to be top five-ish in all of baseball. It has that kind of potential, if not better. We just need our rotation, specifically our number two starter in Aaron Nola, just to be above average. Like, I'm not asking for great. I'm not asking for a Cy Young season. I'm not asking for under 3 ERA. We just can't have, what'd you say, 4.65 last year? That can't happen, especially with Zach Wheeler coming off the most innings he's ever pitched last year, coming off where he kind of, you know, tinkered off a bit and tailed off a bit towards the end of the season because there was just so many innings on that arm. There is so much pressure on Aaron Nola this season for this team to succeed. And from what we've seen so far, like I said, I don't want to overreact too much, but it does not look good for Aaron
Nola. I almost wonder, is there going to be someone to overstep that position on Aaron Nola? And I think maybe I'm wrong. Is the first person that came to your mind Ranger Suarez when I made that statement? I don't want to put the expectations that that's something Ranger Suarez can do after last year. Now, he was electric, right? Closer role, dynamic, shutting down everyone. Then he moves into the back end of that starting rotation. You see a complete game. I mean, he's literally blowing the ball past guy. He's incorporating another pitch, which needs to happen if he's going to be more in that starting rotation. I can't say that that's going to happen, but I just wonder, is Aaron Nola going to move and transition a little bit more into a three instead of, because at one point he's our one, he's our opening day guy every year. Then you add Zach Wheeler, sensational. A lot of innings, as you mentioned. I don't know what that's going to do, knowing that he's already had a slower start to his offseason and the starting of ramping up to the beginning of this season.
Had the flu, he said, and kind of set him back a little bit.
Not only that, too, that was after he had some shoulder issues, but they claim the shoulder issue wasn't anything crazy. It's more precautionary this early on, and things seem to be getting better. In terms of guys stepping up, though, this is less about the starting role. I'll tell you one guy that's going to be a difference maker on this team, because you haven't had one of these guys in a long time. We had historic fails in the pen almost every single year over the last couple of seasons. Sir Anthony Dominguez is legit. Sir Anthony Dominguez coming back from the surgery that he had, the way he's throwing right now, the slider, it's going to be insane how you're going to have someone in the pen that you could truly rely on. And I feel that comfortable saying it. I don't know what Knable's going to be, and I would love it for Sir Anthony maybe to establish himself as a shutdown dude for you late. Maybe Knable could be a setup guy. I don't know how it's going to work out. We don't have enough information yet, but he's serious. He's going to be a weapon, and a weapon that we didn't have for a while now.
I'll be honest, I'm tempering my expectations with Sir Anthony Dominguez a little bit. The guy hasn't
pitched. Don't do that to me. Did you see how excited I just was?
Oh, I was.
And you come in with that?
I want to keep you level-headed. That's all,
I hate that out of you. I hate how you keep me sane.
I'm sorry. Just trying to do my job here. Now, last year, it's been 2 years since this guy has pitched. I love what I see from spring training. That fastball is electric. He looks like old Sir Anthony Dominguez from 3 years ago when we were like, okay, we have our closer for the next 5 years in this guy. I'm excited. I see flashes. I'm worried about how that arm's going to hold up in a 162-game season. Obviously, maybe he's pitching every 3 days rather than every other day. I think and Girardi's pretty good with the bullpen anyway. He doesn't like to overuse guys, specifically multiple days in a row, 3 days in a row, whatever it may be. So I think they're going to be cautious with him. I always think back, and it's a different player, who was the darling of the bullpen in spring training last year? It was Jose Alvarado. We were all, oh my God, look at this guy. Look at the stuff that he throws. We got a steal. We absolutely fleeced the Rays.
Yeah, but to be fair.
Different pitcher.
To be fair, with Alvarado is we knew his history of wildness. So that wasn't a part of us unaware of how crazy he could be with his location. But it was more the fact that you went from so disturbing bullpen that at least having someone who can at least hold their own in Major League Baseball obviously drove it up. With Sir Anthony, there's no crazy, wild, awful background of how inconsistent he could be with the strike zone the same way an Alvarado was.
Sure, it was more just I'm tempering spring training and the expectations that I get from it. That's all. I'm really excited, like I said, but I want to see how that arm does throughout an 162-game season, how he can do multiple days pitching. Can he pitch 2 days in a row? But you're right. If Knable can be the guy that he's shown flashes of, especially last year with the Dodgers. Now, he's had his injury issues as well. But if you have a guy in Knable and then Sir Anthony Dominguez, if those are your 8-9 guys, you can put them whatever way you want to. And they can be steady and reliable and have 3 ERAs, low 3 ERAs, mid 3 ERAs, or even lower. This team can be lethal. It really can.
It's exciting. You're right. I'm obviously super pumped up for baseball.
You should be.
I got notes here. Notes and notes of positives and negatives after each game. Am I sick in the head?
Yeah, you are.
Here's my negatives against Toronto. Brogdon and Coonrod did not look good. Here's my positives, though. JT Realmuto, bomb. Rhys Hoskins, 2 hits. Didi, 2 hits. Veerling, 2 hits. Moniak, a nice rip off the wall. Schwarber, great exit velocity. But the shift ruined it. Although, in a few years,
you next wrote that year, down
yes,
for your notes.
Smoked exit velocity.
Oh, my God.
And then shift in parentheses, because I know the shift won't be there as baseball continues in another season. So, yeah, of course, that was for what I saw against Toronto. I get it, though. I'm an outlier. I'm that pumped up for Phillies baseball, and I'm that stoked. We're going to see Castellanos today for his first how do you do in a Phillies uniform. Here you go. Here's my positives in another game. This is actually hilarious to say this out loud. Let me ask you this. Is there another...
Is this the first time you've read these out loud or no?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just making sure.
I want to know, is there any other person on planet Earth that wrote down positives and negatives on Philly spring training games?
There is, yes.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so. Oh, no. I'm not talking like Jim Salisbury writing it down. I'm talking about
like the casual fan.
Yeah.
No. It's just
Bryson Stott works an unbelievable, comfortable at-bat.
Who's going to be getting time at third base today, apparently, as well?
Well, I saw Didi smack a homer. If Didi is one of my X factors.
Yep.
And when I wrote that out there on Twitter, I got some backlash because the response was, what do you mean? It's going to come down to Harper, Castellano, Schwarber. I know that. I'm saying, what could be the difference in this team having that extra punch, having that extra surge. And if you have a DD wake up and give you 20-plus homers that could bat around seventh in your lineup, that's the additional X factor. It's sort of like if you think of the Sixers. James Harden and Joel Embiid, they need to be the best version of themselves for you to even have a fighter's chance. But who can be that X factor? Well, if Tobias actually can play, or if Maxey can be steady as a young player and shine the way that we've seen, those are the differences in getting that extra push that you are going to need to accomplish your goal. That's what I mean by X factor at Adidi. And I'll tell you what, Alec Bohm looks lost right now. The same mistakes at third base. He doesn't look any more prepared in that area. I wouldn't be surprised if Dave Dombrowski tries to make a move and Alec Bohm's not in the center of that discussion.
Yeah, I mean, Bohm, obviously, we're all extremely excited about Bohm. He had that tremendous rookie season where he finished, I believe, second in Rookie of the Year in the NL,
yes,
only behind Devin Williams, I believe it was. And then he had just a dreadful year last year, not only at the plate, but in the field as well. And he was borderline unplayable. He got sent down, actually, to AAA later in the season. I wouldn't be surprised as well. And at this point, if you're going, quote-unquote, all-in, signing these guys late 20s, early 30s to big-time contracts, I'm still excited about Bohm, and I don't think he's nearly as bad of a player as we saw last year. I do think there's 270 potential with 20-plus home runs in him still. But if you have a chance to get a legit arm, whether it be the bullpen or a starting pitcher or a legit center fielder possibly, I don't think you should hesitate to trade an Alec Bohm. And that's crazy to say, because if you asked me that a year ago, I would say you're absolutely crazy. After what we saw last year and the moves that Dombrowski and John Middleton have made, I wouldn't rule it out either.
I wonder what they're going to do at center field, because originally in the offseason you heard the Oakland A's were ready to ship some guys out of town, and if you move an Alec Bohm, can you get a center fielder? I think right now at center field, they do like Matt Vierling, and obviously Odubel was part of their plan. He ends up having an injury, and he's going to be out some time, which opens up the door for a lefty for a platoon. And I just wonder, is Mickey Moniak going to snag this thing? Because, you know, Adam Hastley, is he going to snag the left side of the plate of the platoon? Or is Matt Vierling going to be an everyday guy? What are they going to do at center field? But both guys right now are seeing the ball well in spring training.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of best case scenario for them. Obviously, it's not the type of names that we would love to hear to have a center field platoon. But Vierling looks good so far in spring. And if Moniak can, you know, just stay above water. I really don't think Hastley has anything.
It's just the bat.
He has nothing with the bat.
Nothing. It's so bad. You have to be really bad for me to go, I'd rather prefer Moniak getting time over you. And that's how I feel about Adam Hastley at this point. I don't know. I mean, maybe one guy just takes it and it's Matt Vierling every day. He plays that well.
They're going to have every opportunity because Odubel's out, what, multiple weeks, I believe he's going to be, you know, without or not playing. So they're going to have every opportunity. I think they're going to try a platoon at first, and I think it does end up being probably Moniak and or Hastley there with Vierling. But if Vierling can go on a little bit of a hot streak and, you know, maybe be hitting 250, a couple bombs, he has every single opportunity to steal that job. Now, because the offense is so stacked,
you don't need him to be anything crazy.
Exactly. And if he can just be competent in center field. So that's why if we are going to trade a Bohm, I would almost rather it be for a pitcher. I think the offense is pretty damn good. Like, obviously, you can improve defensively. You bring in a nice defensive center fielder, a guy like Ramon Laureano, who's a really good center fielder for the Oakland A's. That's going to cost you probably Bohm and more. To me, because there are such holes, I believe, in the starting rotation in the bullpen. If we are going to move off on a Bohm, I would rather it be for an arm.
No, it's a good point. I just wonder about that left side of the infield, and I have no idea what it's going to shape out to be. But, you know, we do know that you have bullpen pieces like Familia, and you have guys like Alvarado. And if you're going to give other squads an opportunity to get another out, or you're giving them extra outs in an inning, you don't think that's going to come back to bite you with some guys who we know are all around the strike zone and can put guys on base, and then they have to get themselves out of that jam, and you're already putting more pressure on players that you got to escape by the skin of your teeth every single time you can. So let's not add anything more towards that. And we'll see. We'll see how the Phillies end up going. But I'll tell you what, my adrenaline rush for some baseball is at an all-time high. I'm even tuning into Yankee spring training. I'm tuning into every spring training. I'm sick. Now, maybe it's because they're 1 o'clock games. And it's like, hey, I could throw it on in the background, whatever. It's just like background noise. I have the station on listening to the Cuz or something. And then, you know, it's on mute in the background on a secondary TV. Maybe it's more of the timing of it. And it's the transition as we roll into some nicer weather, although I don't know if we're necessarily getting that upcoming.
Which is ridiculous. It was 70 degrees a week ago, and now it's going to be 30 for the next 3 days.
I was in shorts a few days ago, and here I am in like a crew neck sweater.
Yeah, I got a long sleeve and a hoodie on right now. It's ridiculous.
Well, here's the positive. No walks for me, so now my legs don't break down. Right? If there's some positives.
I don't want you walking 2 days in a row, man. No. You might be out next weekend if that happens.
Two walks in a row?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's devastating. Take it easy there, kid.
Devastating. All right, there was some Eagles news to transition a little bit into the Philadelphia Eagles. As soon as Tyrone and I got off the airwaves yesterday, they did make a signing, and I think that signing is a good one out of Howie Roseman. The last we spoke, Tom, we discussed how I want to wait for all of it to end before we give it any sort of grade. Because if you grade before you see the full package that is brought in by the Eagles front office, well, then it's not fair. The job's not done. The job's not finished, if you will. So you kind of have to give all around the amount of time to see what the vision is. Now, I will admit, when I saw Derek Barnett come back, I started to question, what are they doing? What is their mindset? Granted, depth piece, and if you brought someone in with a different name that had similar style of stats for a guy that you know would play only a certain percentage of the snaps in a lesser role, you probably would feel a different type of way about it. But knowing that Derek Barnett is a boneheaded player and he does hit the quarterback late, there's always a yellow flag being thrown. It does make you wonder about the idea behind it, but the Eagles did make some moves. We'll touch on that, and of course, we'll look around the NFL because it has been a wild offseason. And this has been one of the most bizarre ones we could ever imagine. I'm almost going to have to sit down Sunday at 1 o'clock when the season begins and go, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one because Tom Brady came back from retirement because Russell Wilson's now on the Denver Broncos and everybody else is moving towns. You're going to forget half of them and they're crazy moves. You're going to forget Tyreek Hill. No, that's not one you're going to forget at all. And Anita Marks is going to join us for the next 3 hours here in studio. So it's going to be a lot of fun. 610-632-0975. That's the phone number to hop in as we roll into the 1 o'clock hour here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.